From Jefferson Public Radio, I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another JPR Live session. Joining me today in our performance space feels like it is long overdue. Out in support of a record called Goners is none other than Laura Gibson. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's fantastic to finally have you here. Yeah. I say that it feels overdue because you are actually a state of Jefferson resident, at least originally.
Jefferson Public Radio is my, I would call it my home public radio station.
Welcome
home.
I listened
to it growing up. Thank you.
It's been a long time since you've lived in the area, though.
Yeah.
Welcome home nonetheless.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great. It feels great to be here.
Your parents were JPR listeners, or maybe still are listening from a distance now, but was it primarily our Rhythm and News Service, or were they classical music fans?
Mostly the news service, yeah. and all the, you know, all the syndicated shows that...
Right on.
That were there. And we'd go to, I remember going to a couple of Jefferson Public Radio event, kind of variety show event things when I was a kid. And my parents just brought us along. And even though we'd, you know, sometimes we'd be like, but we want to go do this other thing, you know, but we loved it. I'm really thankful for that education, I guess, that I had growing up.
When did you first pick up guitar?
Not until college, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't grow up in a musical family.
You were an athlete as a kid,
I was an athlete and really into school. And it just didn't seem... I think I always wanted to play music and wanted to sing, but I just didn't think it was an option for me. I was pretty shy about expressing myself. And both singing and songwriting are such... risky endeavors for a shy person. And
especially when you're doing it by yourself on stage with a guitar in your hand.
Yeah, so it really took me until college that I think the kind of my own need for expression outweighed my fear of expressing myself, I guess. So. Mm.
Well, that love for school as a kid has continued with you, right? You just completed a master's program?
It's true, yeah. I did an MFA in fiction writing, which was such a treat to go back to school. And it was very dreamy to go back to school in my 30s. And so now I'm like, oh, I'll get another, every decade of my life, I'll get some sort of degree maybe.
Yeah. Has the fiction writing degree helped your songwriting, or has it yanked it in a completely different direction than what your center had been?
I think it can only help, you know, spending 2 years just completely immersed in language and storytelling is definitely didn't hurt my songwriting. I think one of the things I notice about my own songwriting is I tend to populate my songs now with a lot more concrete objects. Mm. I think you can kind of, within songwriting, you can get away with throwing some abstract words out there and it sometimes works and sounds poetic, but in fiction you really have to ground any sort of abstract ideas or abstract experimental language. You really have to ground that in kind of concrete objects that mm. are in the world. And I've found that the last couple of records I've really done that more within my songs. Yeah, but then it's funny having another thing. Now I'm always thinking, like, when am I going to get back to fiction writing? And because music, you know, when you're touring a record, as we were talking about earlier, it's just so all-consuming,
yeah.
Especially the first 6 months of it. And so, and writing really just takes a lot of mental space and physical space. So I do now. I'm always kind of longing for the other thing, and to all of a sudden split my love of making things and two. So we'll see. I was listening to this podcast today talking about people's artists' side hustles. And I was thinking, like, oh, writing a novel is the absolute worst side hustle. It's going to take me 10 years. But it's just such a joy I just feel so thankful that I'm able to do this and to fall in love with a new form after finding the form of songwriting is really a gift.
It feels like you were able to accomplish all of this without shelving the music career. I mean, it's only really been 2 years since the last record came out, so it's not like there's been a void of Laura Gibson music.
Yeah, well, the last record came out towards the end of my program. I started it before going in.
So you timed it well, is what you're saying.
Yeah, or accidentally. So there was actually quite a gap between the third record and the fourth record. It was more like 4 years instead of 2 years. Mm. So that's kind of when the gap, when the shelving took place. But it's a scary thing to, especially we're in a culture that really craves content. And if you're any sort of artist, you're just really like, okay, make the next thing. And it's really, it took a lot of discipline to set aside the time to learn. And I think, and it was so rewarding, and it can be so hard to take those steps and be like, I think I'll be better off and I'll be happier 10 years from now if I take these 2 years and hide away and try to learn. But it's so counterintuitive to our culture today. So,
well, the new record is fantastic.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's called Goners. Laura Gibson is my guest live today here on Jefferson Public Radio. Playing songs from this new record, solo acoustic. What do you want to do first? And what is the story behind this one? I know that your songs have substantial storylines.
Yeah, they do. They vary from being collage-y to story, very direct storytelling. So I'm going to play a song called Slow Joke Grin. And this is the one song that I wrote before I came back. I wasn't still in graduate school, but I was still kind of in New York after graduate school and wondering how much Portland had changed and how much my relationships had changed being gone and just sort of thinking through. And then I also, the other element of this song is that I think a lot of my songs could maybe be called love songs, but I don't know if I've ever written anything directly as, that I said, well, this is a love song. But I wanted to write a song that was a want song, which I feel like there's many great, Leonard Cohen has some of these sort of want songs. And it, for some reason, it feels a little bit more vulnerable to of a statement to say I want you than to say I love you. Mm. And I think, especially as a woman, I think, and so I wanted to really, that was sort of a challenge I had set to myself, was to write a want song. And this is what it ended up being. Diamond hands and the quick wit sentences. I have no plans. You're the only home I ever wanted. But now, five floors above, the siren moan, steam pipes ticking off. Morning, I can hear the neighbors' babies through the walls. Love is a songbird with a sickle claw. You with a slow joke grin, watch the town torn down and built again. In the pause between the riddle and the punchline, you held the kite tethered tight to your chest. But I was never one to second guess or draw a line between love and fear of loneliness. Thank you. sawdust head, broken trigger on the starting gun. Oh, I can't find another way to say I want you. I ought to pull this hook from my cheek, but I'll keep on shouting from the fire escape. I'll keep shouting from a wife and window, from a bridge, from a field, from a ferry in the harbor, from the soul, the dark wound in the mountain. I want you. I want you. I want you. I want you.
That is called Slow Joke Grin. It's Laura Gibson playing a tune from the new record called Goners. She's live today in the JPR studios. Information online, lauragibsonmusic.com. You once said in an interview that in talking about your fine arts degree and why you chose to get a master's degree in fine arts writing, that you've been saved often enough by art to know that it is at the very least a worthy endeavor.
Yeah, you know, I think about that so much, and not just going back to get an MFA, but also, and songwriting, you know, I can spend hours and hours just trying to rhyme two lines together, and there's so much that is completely absurd in what I do, but I remind myself that it's about, you know, just choosing this endeavor to make art is worthwhile, whether, you know, whatever status my art takes in the world or whatever, you know, whatever sort of attention it gets, I do really believe in the endeavor of trying to make meaning and more and more recognize its value in my own life and in the public's life.
Yeah. There are a couple of really interesting moments in your life and in your career that I want to touch on briefly before we hear another tune. One of them, of course, is that we are all pretty aware of the important role that NPR's Tiny Desk concerts have taken. In fact, we've even participated in the last few years of the regional Tiny Desk competition.
Oh, cool.
That entire series, everything that is NPR's Tiny Desks, started with you.
Yes, yeah. I love telling this story because it began in a moment that felt like the end for me. I had gone to South by Southwest. I'd spent all this money going down there.
Which is organized chaos.
It is. It's so chaotic, and it's just there's so much kind of desperation, and it's not my vibe.
Yeah, I was just going to say, South by is very noisy, and you are not.
Yeah, I've had really great experiences, and I've somehow made friends within the chaos that I've kept for years and years, but including the fellows at NPR. But I played this show, and I was playing mostly solo. I think I had a friend sit in on a couple songs, and it was at this bar that they decided instead of asking for the badges, they'd make more money if they just let anyone come in. And it was, I think there was some sort of sports event that night. And it was, so I'm playing, and I think I just imagine people on the street that were wanting to party were like, oh, there's a bar we can have a conversation in. Like, it's so quiet because my voice is so quiet. And so it just filled up with all these people talking. And then the, speakers were kind of buzzy, and I couldn't hear myself, and it just felt so awful, and was one of those moments that I was like, why am I doing? Like, I definitely need to like gain some other skills and get a job when I get back home, because this is not working out. But in the audience at that show was Bob Boylan and Stephen Thompson from NPR, and I saw them very clearly. I knew what they had looked like because they'd both, I think, plugged my music, my first record at that point, at some point, so I'd kind of like recognized their faces, and they were with, you know, one sweet thing was that this little audience of people was really with me, and kind of, I looked out and I saw Stephen Thompson raising his fist at the sound engineer to turn it up, but I did, I got off the stage, and I was like, well, I should go talk to those important people, you know, but I was so flustered from playing this show and from the chatter and everything that I felt like I was going to start crying as soon as I started talking to them. And then first thing Bob says is, we've got an idea. and as you know, it, so many things fell into place in order for that first one to happen. But one was that I'd been invited to go on tour, opening for Colin Molloy of the Decemberists. And so I had a date in Washington, D.C., like the following month. And so they said, what if you came to the office? And I said, yep, I'll be there next month. And so it worked. You know, I think you never know, and that's something I've learned throughout my music career, is what are the things that feel like this is the worst possible thing that could have happened, right. Often end up being, you know, amazing things are born out of them. And so, you know, you're just being at this for 12 years or so now, you learn not to have expectations, and there's just so many pleasant surprises. And that was kind of a big pleasant surprise, that one.
Yeah, and that has turned into a tremendous force in the music world.
Yeah, it's so crazy how big it is.
Another thing that I remember reading about you a few years back is this crazy story of what happened to you in New York.
Yeah.
Your apartment building exploded.
Yes.
And you were home.
I was home. Yeah. So it was within real estate in New York. There's a lot of greed and a lot of corner cutting. And the landlord in my building had cut some corners in order to get some other units up and running, and did some sketchy gas line maneuvering in order to save some money. And that ended up being an explosion. And I was home. Luckily, my door faced the explosion, kind of shot out one way, and the stairwell in my door went the other way. So I just ran. I felt it and knew immediately something had gone.
Wow.
Something terrible had happened, and I ran out. And then within, you know, by the end of the night, three buildings were a pile of rubble.
Holy cow!
And I had
were you hurt?
No, I was totally fine. Two young men were killed in the explosion, though, which is so heartbreaking, and I think about them and their families all the time. And so I feel very fortunate that I had gotten out.
Were you able to rescue any belongings?
No, I didn't even bring my wallet.
Oh,
I had my phone in my hand, and that was the one thing. So the first week, I really had to just walk around and rebuild my identity before I could do anything else. So it was just, you know, I can't stress enough how losing stuff was just the least of it. It did, like how little that mattered at all, compared to, you know, getting out without being injured. And it was a really, it's something that I will continue to think about for my whole life. And also it has made me really want to be an advocate for housing and safe housing and affordable housing for people.
And you were saying before you started today that you're basically back out on the West Coast now, living in Portland.
Yeah. I still have kind of one foot in New York, but my family is here. My partner's in Portland, and my dearest people that I love are all in Oregon. So I'm mostly out here now.
Well, we're thrilled you're here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Laura Gibson is my guest live today here on Jefferson Public Radio. The newest release is called Goners. Information can be found at lauragibsonmusic.com. Okay, what's next?
I am going to play a song called I Don't Want Your Voice to Move Me. It's the final song on the record.
Oh.
on the eve of your departure, I sat beside you on the kitchen floor. You said darkness has no virtue of its own, it's only darkness. What is lost, you were tired of metaphor. I once crawled along the ruins, found you up above the timber line, where the mountain stood before us like a bright narrow white. The sun was honeycomb, it turned your white hair gold. I don't want your voice to move me. I don't want to be cracked open. I don't want the knot to loosen in my throat, to place a landmine down a rabbit hole I know. Pale face, same time like a dog, always barking at a ghost. You know I don't go easy. I never made a myth of your disease. Hedged my bets with every soul I ever loved except for one. Honey, all I know of hope is throwing stones into the void. I don't want your voice to move me. I don't want to be cracked open. I don't want the broken headlight flicker, the bright pines, the silver sigh of the moon behind you. When I find you, driftwood bones in fog and smoke, the pole, the yoke, the knotted oak, a joke, a hymn we only spoke and never sung. Those of us born and lost, you know, we only trust the light on the horizon. When I find you, I don't want your voice to move me.
That is Laura Gibson. It's music from Goners. She's playing live for us today here on JPR Live Sessions. That record out on Barsuk Records, a Seattle music label. You can find information at lauragibsonmusic.com. You mentioned that for this record, and I don't know that it wasn't the case for previous efforts, but for this record, you tore your heart and brain apart. What do you mean by that? Why was this one different? Or was it different?
I mean, I probably have done that for every record, and it's just the freshest heart tearing is always the
so it's new
always right? feels the deepest but I worked so hard on this record and tried to say something honest about my life at this point and tried to kind of stare into the abyss a little bit. And then there's always a mix of sort of raw expression and vulnerability within songwriting. And then there's also this other side where you're really crafting the words and the music and every sound to fit together and kind of make the most meaning possible and also bring you the most pleasure, I think, is part. A lot of it is just what sounds or what words really tickle me. But I spent a long time working on lyrics, and when I finished the final lyrics, I kept going back and hiding away and going up. I went up out to Joseph, Oregon for a week and hid away and worked on lyrics. And at the end, I'd felt like, oh, this feels like what finishing a book might be like. Only it's, I guess it's only 10 songs, but I really put a lot of effort into it. And I always liken making a record into, there's this feeling, I think, finishing a project where, you know, it's so small on one level, but when you're making it and you finish something that you've worked so hard for, it feels like I just built a raft to save myself. and I hope that I always have that feeling finishing any project in my life. It's just, it's so wonderful to finish things. And then, you know, there's this whole other life, which I'm deep in right now, of promoting the record and touring the record and playing songs for people. And which is also really wonderful because music, the most alone I ever feel is making music. And then the most connected I ever feel is making music. And so to kind of hold both those things at the same time is pretty fantastic. Hmm.
You have talked about how there's a fair bit to be found in this album about your father.
Yeah. Well, I'd gone into it thinking I wanted to write a record about grief. And I think I lost my dad when I was 14. And so this is such a formative time, I think, that grief has really become this. I think everything I've ever made had something to do with grief. And it's always sort of been the, you know, I think the thing that loss really, I think, out of that, I was, you know, was born this sort of artist part of me. And so I really wanted to explore and not just go and kind of feel that loss, but to trace it through my life and to think about what that loss means to me in my 30s and within a romantic relationship that I've been in for a long time, and what does it mean for me to plan a future, and to just kind of follow the ends of those questions. And so it became a record about loss, but also a record about the sorts of, I guess, our accountability to each other and about shared grief and the way we nurture each other or fail to nurture each other, I guess.
Well, it has turned out beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, they're great songs. Laura Gibson is my guest today live here on JPR. That new album can be found at lauragibsonmusic.com, all the typical places online. It's called Goners. Will you wrap up with one more tune?
Yeah, I'll play a song, Domestication, and this will be a pretty different version of the song than what's on the record.
Once again, I've been alone too long. I arrive, thistle stung, built a body from a bone you'd throw. I was cold, I let my hair grow wild. I shook the dust from my boots, I hid my teeth beneath the honey jar. Born a wolf in woman's clothes, shadow stained, blue and gray, tore a hole in every dress I made. Knit our limbs and trim the ivy back, you let me lie in your bed. You saw my hunger, call the tenderness. Take me gently, make me into somebody. Fables speak and needle stitch, oh I only wanted to be easy. Ever dark, ever quiet, never barking out loud. I'll be gone before the dawn kicks up. Well, I have no patience left. won't tuck my tongue into my mouth. Take me gently, make me into somebody easy. Fable, speak and needle stitch, oh, I only wanted to be easy.
That's called Domestication. It's Laura Gibson playing live for us today here on JPR. The new record is called Goners. Information can be found at lauragibsonmusic.com. Thanks for that.
Thank you so much for having me.
So before I let you go, Joey Burns of Calexico has been here. And I know that you were out on tour with Calexico at one point.
Yeah.
He did not mention when he was here anything about the cinnamon roll. Tell me what the cinnamon roll is.
That's so funny. Well, I have to say that the guitar that I'm playing right now that I just played is Joey Burns gave that to me after the fire. Yeah, I lost a similar guitar, classical guitar, and Joey found that one in a shop that was sort of similar to mine and got it for me and gave it to me. So that's a nice circle connection. Oh, the cinnamon rolls are sort of pre-show routine that I learned years ago, and it's kind of remained it's like a pre-show handshake. And as far as I know, Calexico I taught it to them and they're still doing it, but it's sort of everybody puts in one hand and then you swirl it together. It's really hard to explain over the radio.
Laura Gibson, thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much.